big up all the teachers. Time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
The future of education, singularly the most important topic of our time, where it is going, how it is evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education will get to the root of this problem. And now, here is your host, Dr. James Avington Miller.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The War Report on Public Education. If you were with me last week, I laid out some of the broad strokes of what this program is going to seek to do and be over the course of the next weeks, months, as we go. And today, I promised last week that while I was laying things out in broad strokes, this week's show would to provide more detail on some of those broad strokes that I outlined last time. And what I want to do today is start off with some very fundamental concepts that are so very important to public education and to the United States as a country. I want to take us back to right after the successful conclusion of the American Revolutionary War, when we kicked a lot of British butt. Hope they don't get offended by that. And there began a different kind of battle that took place in the Continental Congress, where the rich, powerful landowners came together and argued over what type of country this was going to be. One of the things that they did not want was establishing a new monarchy with kings and queens and royalty that they had rejected when they cast off British Empire control over the colonies. But that only led to a lot of debate as to what this country was going to be like. And he came up with the idea that it would be a republic. Not Republicans, but a republic. And they were looking at the almost 2,000-year history of civilization and those instances where a republic form of governance developed. And in looking at that history, one of the things that they were extremely mindful of was that no republic had survived indefinitely throughout the history of human organization. And so they wanted to not make the mistakes that previous attempts at building republics had made and failed. So they argued over what this country should be, what its government should be, what should be the purpose of the government, how the government should come about, and et cetera. This debate was done in a sort of crisis atmosphere. They had just finished one crisis in terms of a war. Now there was a different crisis as related to what to do after this war. And what they finally decided on was it would be a republic, and we would practice a form of democracy. But even there was conflict, and the conflict arose when the people that were later called the Federalists, who had an idea of what the government should be like and what the government should do and how it should operate, And those people, in the form of James Madison, he thought that the primary responsibility of government was to protect the minority of the opulent. Today we can think of that as the 1%. Against the majority. In other words, protect the rich against the majority non-rich. Madison believed that the non-rich, the poor, the working class, they didn't call them working class, of course, during that time, but basically that's what they were referring to. They pose a threat at some time in the history of this new democracy to the democracy itself. And his belief was based on the observation that as the population already consisted of more working poor than rich. And that population, the working poor, would grow. And it would grow exponentially. And it would increase the ratio of rich to poor unfavorably to the rich. And at some point, maybe the poor would start yearning for a different kind of system, a system where working hard would lead to one having more blessings, that they call it then, than they currently had. So that at some point, maybe the poor would say, the way in which we can improve our lot is to have a redistribution of wealth in the country. That was a major concern. Joining him was a guy by the name of John Jay, who would become the first Supreme Court Justice. And John Jay pretty much had the same philosophy. And his philosophy basically said that those who own the country ought to govern it. I'll say that again, because this really struck me years ago when I read it, and even now when I read it more recently. Those who own the country ought to govern it. Those ideas did not make it in the formal declaration that the country developed at the time, but the principles, the ideas, the values of favoring the rich over the poor, or in this case, property over people, and that the people who own the country should govern it, those principles made its way into the informal structure of our government and has been there ever since. I mentioned those two people and the concepts that they adhere to because, as I said last week, I believe that the central conflict that education has had from day one has been over what will be the purpose or purposes of public education in a democracy. And that whoever controls public education and schools will govern education in schools. Going back to John Jay's statement that those who own the country should govern. Those who own or control public education should govern it. That philosophy, I'm going to call it philosophy for now, has been with us from the very beginning, both formation of the country and our giving birth to and life to public education. Now, during the birth, or say prior to the actual birth of public education. The system of educating youth, was handled pretty much by families, by the church, the local community itself. It was haphazard. It wasn't systematic, and not everyone got an education. And the education that was obtained was very rudimentary. The basic three R's, you know, the reading, the writing, and arithmetic, although writing is not an R, was pretty much what you got, and got that on a very rudimentary level. The rich, on the other hand, they would bring in private tutors, send their kids abroad, principally to England and Germany, the center of intellectual activity in Europe at the time, so that, again, there was this divide between the common person and the wealthy person. And so when this country started to grow and more people started coming in from other countries, creating this huge diversity, there developed another sense of crisis, just like the crisis that led to the Revolutionary War and the crisis that led to the formal declaration of the United States Constitution. There were people who thought, we have a problem growing here, in that all these people who are coming in, they're bringing different values, different customs, different religion, and they're moving into the cities, creating the urban environment, as opposed to moving to the rural farm areas of any state or county. And they were concentrating in large numbers, and they began to pose a perceived threat in terms of whether or not they would accept or adhere to the founding principles of this country. And one of the assumptions that the Federalists espoused was that they hoped that the majority would always be obedient and show deferential behavior to the elite, the political, economic elite. And that if they did, then the country would always work as a whole, be united, and the structure that was created would last indefinitely. Well, with the inflow of the new immigrants that I mentioned earlier, there was this perception that maybe their numbers would grow to such extent and their diversity would be such that they won't accept this notion of deference, compliance to the majority, I'm sorry, to the minority. And so the idea was developed that basically said, why don't we find a way to bring all of these new people into a situation where they will be taught, they will learn the values, the principles that make this country what it is, and it will encourage them to adopt these principles and hence increase their socialization into the American economic political structure. That idea, once it took hold, and people start working towards implementing it, became the birthplace of the American public education system. It was a system based upon compliance, compulsory attendance. Families had to send their children to the schools that were going to be developed. The schools would teach certain values, morals, and rudimentary skills, and hopefully we would have mass assimilation into the ways of the United States of America at that particular time. That was the very beginning. We're going to take a short break, then we'll go into what happened from that point forward. See you in a few seconds. Okay, I'm back. We left off with the idea of how public education and schooling was conceived, and basically hinting at its purpose or purposes. In developing public education, there were definite purposes that I'll call the founders of public education had in mind. And the various purposes had values. They were values that people believe should be the guiding principles for what the country should be and what public education should be. And you have to keep that in mind, that, as I mentioned last week, the central conflict has, for me, always been around over what the purpose or purposes of public education should be, and then the fight over who should define the purpose and who should control it. I want to introduce something that I said earlier and make sure that you got it, was that this country was, I'm going to be very broad here, country was come out of the ashes of perceived crisis. The government that developed after the war saw a crisis. Later, public education would be developed based upon a perceived crisis. This is something that I want you to remember. So much of the history of public education and schooling in this country have been shaped in reaction to perceived or actual crisis. There are people who have taken advantage of this crisis, be it manufactured or real, to seek to get their values, their beliefs, put in place as a solution to the crisis. This is a theme that you will hear time and time again over the course of this show. And you will come to believe, I hope, that I'm right when I say that people have taken advantage of manufactured or real crisis to seize control of the government as well as public education. So, having stated that, let me go back to where I left off. There was this perceived crisis that this growth of the population, but also the introduction of an industrial economy, technology, limited as it was, were all beginning to take place. People were beginning to feel differently, perhaps, about themselves and their lot in life, and they were looking for a way to change and create something better for themselves. Public education, then, was developed in part to say to people, you get an education, and that education would improve your lot in life. Hence, the formation of this thing that I'm sure everyone out there has heard and lived with, this notion of the American dream. Public education was used to tell people that if you get an education, this would be the vehicle to improve your lot in life. We bought it. My family did. So did I. And so that, in that sense, the purpose of education was to socialize different people into a set of values, beliefs, and behavior that would ostensibly improve their lives, but in reality would help maintain the status quo of property over people, and those who govern, those who own the country should govern. So we get public education. It gets started. It's very rudimentary. It's not good. It's not plentiful, but it's a start. After public education was put in play, it wasn't too long thereafter. When I say too long, I'm talking it wasn't 100 years. It was maybe a decade or two or more, where we began to see people saying, this education that we're providing is inadequate. We need to change it, and we need to change it along A, B, C, D direction. And when that happened, you start to see the beginning of the first education reform movement in this country. There would be a series of educational reform movements over the 150-year period or so. I'm going to go into them very briefly this time, just to give you, again, another overview. But what I really want to point out is I use the word reform, reformers. Back in the early 1800s, there were very few people who were challenging the status quo in education and almost any other area of life at the time. But something happened. Individuals and then groups started advocating for change. In this case, we're talking about change in education. Those individuals were called reformers. And what it meant then, it was a role. It was a role that these people were playing. Their nickname was do-gooders. They were people who were trying to, they saw something that they thought was wrong, and they want to change it. They want to improve it. They were the reformers. And you have some pretty famous people back then who became reformers. Most of them came out of religion, mostly Puritan ministers who were preaching for reforms. Benjamin Franklin was a noted one. Frederick Douglass was also a reformer. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, reformer. When the reformers started working almost on a full-time basis, that's when you saw the formation of real, organized reform efforts. And they were trying to reform everything. I'm sure all of us know about our early history and some of the issues that the reformers took on at the time. I say that because, as I said last week, today there's a group of people who call themselves reformers, education reformers. I have a hard time saying that word, reformers, when I talk about these people, because they're not reformers. Reformers wanted to improve on something. Maybe the improvement that they wanted reflected a certain value set, but in the main, it was improve on what is there. Today's reformers, so-called reformers, they don't want to improve on education, public education. They want to destroy it. I'm going to leave you right there, and we're going to have many shows later on that deals with this idea of what today's people who call themselves reformers are really about. I just want to make a distinction today that when you hear reformers and when they call themselves reformers today, we're talking about a different animal than 100 years ago, 150 years ago, when reformers were people who wanted to do good, they want to improve, expand on what was there, as opposed to destroying it. Okay. I got my piece out. If you didn't recognize that, I was like preaching to myself. But anyway, here we go. When people started to look at education, of course, different people had different ideas what education should be about, back to the purpose of education. And we saw some reformers wanted to change along certain lines. They were called the progressive reformers. Other reformers wanted to change along different lines, and they were called the conservative reformers. These are broad terms, and I'm lumping a lot of different groups, individuals, into these two basic categories for just purposes of trying to keep everything heavily clear and fluid for us. In the main, what the progressive reformers were all about was they wanted to change education in certain directions. And what they wanted was for education to be, one, more available to different groups of people. They wanted to have education be more child-centered for the good of the student, for the good of the child. They want to see the child develop more fully as a human being through education. And they wanted to increase equity, which was almost non-existent. They wanted education for women. They wanted education for different immigrant groups. And at a certain time, of course, well after the Civil War, they wanted education for the former African slaves. The point is, they wanted to increase the availability to education to everyone. They wanted equity. The other group, the conservatives, they went principally along the lines of they wanted to improve the efficiency of education. They wanted to make it more streamlined. They wanted to emphasize the reading, writing, and arithmetic. They wanted to emphasize learning how to follow instruction so that when you came out of school, you could come into the workplace and be prepared as a good worker, knowing how to follow directions, having some skills to be able to deal with the new technology that was being discovered and introduced and at lightning speed. These were the things that they wanted to do. The last thing that this group wanted was to increase equity, increase accessibility, and to extend education to include the arts, music, history, and etc. So you had then a division of what the purpose of education and schooling should be. They had groups advocating for their own position. But that's all they did. They advocated for their position. They did things to try and get their position into a position of dominance. But they didn't go to war over it. And in each camp's mind, they were improving education. Not destroying it, but improving it, maybe making it different. But that difference, they saw it as making it better. Better for their definition of purpose, but better anyway. So, you have here the idea that we have public education, as rudimentary as it was, but it's public, it's free, limited accessibility, and you have taxpayers paying for it. I want to put this question out to anyone who's out there. Well, let me preface it by saying first, I want to bet that 93, 94% of all the adults and children in this country have gone to public schools for their education in the past and currently. Anyone want to take my bet on that? Public schools have been the source of education for almost, I won't say 99%, but pretty close to it. I put that out there for the following reason. Think back when you were in school. What was your school day like? How did you like it, dislike it? And for those of us who have been out of school as students for a long, long time, if you reflect back on it, what did you think of your education? What kind of education you got? Was it good? Was it sufficient? Did it serve you well later in life? And the second thing I want you to think about, in your mind, what is the purpose or purposes of public education? Where do you come down on a very long continuum of what people think and have thought over the years public education should be about? I know you have opinions. You may have not thought about it, but you have opinions. Now, with that, I need to do something. I need to tell you about how you can call in and speak live on air. There's a toll-free number, and it's 888-627-6008. I'll repeat. If you want to speak live on air to me and we have a conversation, you can call toll-free 888-627-6008. You can also call the following numbers if you want to leave comments, but not necessarily be live on air, and I hope I'm saying this correctly. And one of the numbers, 530-327-7602. I'm going to repeat that. 530-327-7602. Another number is 530-413-4522. I'll repeat. 530-413-4522. I want you to think about those two issues that I laid out. And if you have some thoughts on them, I would appreciate you giving me a call and expressing your thoughts, and maybe we'll have a dialogue. At least you will want to hear me talk for the entire 55 minutes. With that, we're going to go to another break, give you time to make the call if you want to, and or to reflect more on the two questions that I put out there to you. Let's go to break. Okay, I'm back. I really hope during the break you took some time to think about what you think the purpose of public education should be or was when you were in school, what it should be, and what you want it to be for your children, your grandchildren, or for children in general. I'm going to, during the break, I also reflected on that same question. Of course, I've been reflecting on it for a long, long time. And I jotted down some of the basic purposes that through history, different people have said, this is what the purpose of public education. And let me add, public education in a democracy, very important. So what some people have thought that public education should be about. And I'm also add, before I give you this list, that in many, many instances, public education has really tried to do many of the things I'm about to list. Okay. It's not in any given order, but I'm just going to lay it out here. One of the basic purposes that most people would say public education should do and to be about is helping children master basic skills like reading, writing, and math in the old days. Of course, today there are a lot more skills that you would add to what we would call basic skills. There are those who've advocated that the school should provide career education. That when kids come in, they should get the basics, then they should learn certain skills to go into a trade or go into a profession or what have you. And I just remembered something. When I started middle school, for me, I'm from Detroit, middle school was 7th grade. The counselors would tell girls they should take typing. In high school, they would tell girls they should take typing and stenography. They would tell boys in middle school that they shouldn't take typing. That was basically for girls. Instead, we should take shop. And we had metal shop, we had wood shop, and we had, and you won't believe me when I tell you this, we had print shop. Printing on the old ink press, teaching you how to set type, ink it, roll it up through a press, and come out with a printed page. I knew about that because I took print shop. I didn't take typing. And I'm going to confess something. I never have really learned how to type. After I took my print shop class, I have never seen a print shop since. But I've seen kajillion typewriters and keyboards. Wish I had taken typing. But that was what people thought the purpose of education should be when the time that I was in school. That was one of the purposes. Another purpose was that we should, schools, teachers, and education in general, should help people learn interpersonal skills, how to relate to other people. We should learn to be autonomous individuals, you know, the rugged individual, being able to do it for yourself, by yourself, on your own. We most definitely should teach citizenship, how to be a good citizen in a democracy. We should also teach self-realization, how one should come to realize and actualize oneself, one's potential, and have the next one related to that would be to have a positive emotional and physical well-being. We should teach moral and ethic character so that when kids come out of school, they will be morally sound and very ethical character-wise. Most importantly, we should enculturate, in other words, introduce everyone to a singular culture that is basic America. Along with enculturation is the big-time principle of socialization. You take a whole lot of different people, it's like taking a funnel and turning it upside down with the large opening, pouring all these people into this large opening, and as they go through the funnel, they come out the very narrow end, all pretty much alike. Kind of like standardization, but basically we call it socialization. Big time principle that we teach, or schools are expected to teach. Intellectual development. Well, not a lot of people were into intellectual development, but there were those who were pushing for intellectual development. One thing about American history, American culture, that we're pretty much an anti-intellectual group compared to Europe and other countries where the intellectual is a very prominent status. People look up to the intellectual. Here, we're anti-intellectual, but there are those who want to have the schools develop our intellectual capabilities. So I've given you, I think, close to, and then the other one would be self-concept, that we would develop a very strong, positive self-concept that would hopefully help us go through the world as healthy individuals. And I don't know what you heard and at what point the difficulty started, but I was going through a list of purposes that over the years individuals and groups have lobbied for the public schools to do as their main task of educating. And I'd ask you individually to think about what you think when, I know you don't think about this every day, but what do you think of the purpose of public education as a democracy should be? I wanted to hear from you, but I don't know whether or not that was interfered with or not. But it's a very, very important question. It's the basic question that this show deals with and will be dealing with in one form or the other for the duration of the show. So that being said, I don't know what to do in terms of recapping or going forward. Let me go forward because I think I may have something like 2 to 3 minutes left. The next week's show, next time I'm on the air, I'm going to go more into the basic school reform movements that have taken place over the last 150 years. That's a setup for launching us into the current reform movement that is orchestrated by the corporate state elite that is at war with traditional public education and schools. That is the group that I dub their war and the purpose of their war, the Machiavellian agenda that I mentioned last week. We're going to get into that more in detail. I've tried to lay foundation the first two shows to prepare everyone to be able to better understand and be more aware of what the other shows will talk to you about, giving you a background, giving you a framework for what's to come. Also, the format is going to change a little bit in that I will start having hopefully some really great, wonderful guests on the show. And I'm going to start giving you some news about the war, what took place in the last 2 weeks or the last time we were on air together, so that you can begin to see a picture of the war, the battles, where it's been fought, who's fighting them. If we know what the outcome of that given battle is, I'll be able to tell you, but also be able to place the battles into the big picture so that we can start filling in the dots. So later on, we'll be able to connect the dots and begin to move towards getting the real big picture of the war as it's being waged here in the U.S. Then I want to expand that by talking to people from all over the planet, Europe, Africa, Asia, South America, so that you can hear from people on the ground in those countries what the war is like there. And you can begin to see that this is a global war, and you'll see that some of the same people all over the country, all over the globe, are the ones who are waging this war and what they are waging it for. And so hopefully the last two shows have given you some basic background framework that you can hang your hat on when we start getting into the more detailed discussion of this war. And I'll also do a little more work next week about what I mean when I say war, what's going on that would constitute a level of war. Now, I don't know how much time I have left, and I'm going to assume that my time is up. So I will ask you again, if you have something to say, call in. You can also email. There's a feedback button that you can leave written comments. I got some the last show. I was surprised because it was a show that had never been advertised or promoted before. Oh, by the way, the first show, I was told right after the show concluded that it was one of the most successful premiere shows in the history of the company. The numbers were really, really great for a first-time show. I hope I didn't lose anybody as a result of having a good show last week, and hope you guys came back and maybe even brought some people with you. But we've had a good beginning, and all of that, as I said previously, and not to repeat myself, was background, foundation work.
30 seconds.
I want you individually, collectively, to first become aware. For those of you who have no awareness, begin to get some awareness. For those of you who have been ill-informed, I want to challenge what you think and correct that so that everyone moves to a stage of critical awareness. That's my first goal, and the most important goal is to get everyone to a critical awareness state. You may not agree with me or what have you, but at least you will be aware of the reality of what's going on. So with that, have a good afternoon, and I hope we'll be together again soon. And again, I hope someone will call in and we can go live on air.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.
Take them.